Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Drive Time Savage Nation. The phone number is 855-407-2822. I say Drive Time because on the East Coast, where the largest audiences are, the show is skewed into the Drive Time audience on the biggest stations. On the West Coast, it's at noon until 3 o'clock. Why do I tell you that? Because yesterday, we are the only show in the world that asked the simple question, who actually shot down the Malaysian airliner? You'll notice the propaganda now is complete. It started with a few YouTube videos, very much like Benghazi, and the idiots in the media gobbled it hook, line, and sinker, taking Obama off the hook for the border crisis and covering this around the clock. And we did a story on the MH17 cover-up with Paul Joseph Watson, an interview that many people called me about. The few people I listened to said it was the best show you've ever done or best in years. Every day I hear the best in years. Every day I hear people saying, I never heard shows like this. Where do you get them from? If you missed the interview, the sound is on michaelsavage.com. WorldNet Daily wrote a story saying Savage was ahead of the story. U.S. beginning banning flights to press Israel into ceasefire. Remember I said that yesterday? The cover story of Obama and his minions is that the reason they banned U.S. flights to Israel was to protect passengers. I've got to tell you something. I'm more impressed with Obama and his minions than I've ever been in my life. They are the smartest connivers I've ever seen in the world. They know just how to parse things where they can get away with crimes that no other president could ever get away with, whether it be excuses for why hard drives were trashed, excuses for this, excuses for that. So they say, I'll tell you what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get together. We're going to crush Israel financially. We're going to ban all flights into Israel. But we're not going to do it and say it's a punitive measure. No, we're liable to alienate the Jewish voter. And, of course, Democrats count on the Jewish voter. So what we're going to do is we're saying it to protect flyers into Israel. I saw right through it. And the Washington Examiner published a story soon thereafter saying U.S. flight ban could be Hamas's biggest success and latest clash with Israel. I wrote U.S. isolating Jews closes all flights to Israel on pretext of safety. I know what they did. Now, there are many other stories on michaelsavage.com. I won't bore you with them. I noticed that the news is showing with great solemnity the arrival of the corpses of the flight in the Netherlands. And I'm looking at this, and I'm starting to say, wait a minute, what is this all about? Why are soldiers marching with the caskets as though they're fallen soldiers? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to make light of this tragic situation for all the families that will be affected for eternity with this shoot-down. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. But I'm asking myself, why is there such solemnity surrounding this with full military honors? After all, they were not military officers or soldiers coming back from a war zone. So I'm saying, wait a minute, you mean the worldwide liberal propaganda is so great that they can even turn a tragedy such as this into propaganda value? And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, the atheists who run the media, who don't believe in God, don't believe in a hereafter, are covering the arrival of the bodies in the Netherlands with the slow-stepping soldiers, around-the-clock coverage, again, to isolate, punish, and villainize Putin. Putin is the new devil. Putin is the new Hitler. Putin is the new enemy of everything that the liberal West hates. That's what's going on. So it leads me to the next thing, which is a movie maker named Woody Allen. Woody Allen is plugging one of his new schmaltzy movies. You know, he's still been trying to make himself into Ingmar Bergman since he was 12 years old in Brooklyn. His goal has always been to be the Swedish filmmaker Bergman, but he can't quite achieve it. And no matter what he does, the movies lose money when he tries to get serious, and they only want to see him acting like the putz that he is. And he is, by the way, entertaining. Don't get me wrong, he's a genius. He's a genius comic and a genius entertainer. But whenever he tries to get serious, people don't go to his movies. When he appears in his movies as a neurotic schmendrick, people love it. They can't get enough of that. of him, you know, making a fool of himself. So now he goes and speaks before the New York whatever press club, and he says that life is meaningless, period. Life is meaningless. The filmmaker shared his cheery outlook on life, speaking to the New York press club about his new movie. And I won't mention his new movie because I probably won't see it until his rerun at night 7 years from now. But yet he goes before the press. He's 78 years old. And he starts to talk about the meaninglessness of life. And here's what he said. He says, I firmly believe, and I don't say this as a criticism, that life is meaningless. There have been many great minds, far, far superior to mine, that have come to that conclusion. Both early in life and after years of living, and unless somebody can come up with some proof or some example where it's not meaningless, I think it is. I think it is a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. That's just the way I feel about it. That's what Woody Allen said. He goes on and says, I'm not saying one should opt to kill oneself. Well, can we play the first Woody Allen clip, and then I'm going to continue to read this because I'm leading up to something. Play the first one.
There's
if you don't
so
mind.
Much romance and wonder and magic in your films. Is this how you see the world?
I do. That's half of the time. The other half, I see it as a grim, cruel, brutal place. And so as much as I can, I try and spend time in the romantic part of it. But the other part creeps back all the time.
All right. So he goes on with his old world, his old man depression about the meaninglessness of night, love life. He's been a lifetime atheist, and he believes that when he dies, the world dies. And he believes that cows and humans meet the same end, and therefore cows and humans are the same. All he says basically are, we are nothing but dust in the wind. And he believes that the fate of Adolf Hitler would be the same as the fate of people who want to save cows from a culinary fate. He says there's no meaning in life because he doesn't believe in God. But let me ask you something. He believes that we're nothing but a bunch of atoms animated by electricity in a bath of chemicals. And so, therefore, atheists reach the point where life has no meaning and existence has no meaning. Now, it's still true that he keeps working. I get that. And we have to commend him for his work ethic, which he developed, no doubt, in Brooklyn. That's great. But he goes on, and he says there's no meaning to it. And he said, but the truth of the matter is that when you think of it, every 100 years there's a big flush, and everybody in the world is gone, and there's a new group of people, and that gets flushed. And there's a new group of people, and this goes on and on interminably. And I don't want to upset you, he says, no rhyme or reason. And he says, the universe is coming apart, and eventually there will be nothing, absolutely nothing. All the great works of Shakespeare and Beethoven and Da Vinci, all that will be gone. Now, not for a long time, but shorter than you think, really, because the sun is going to burn out much earlier than the universe vanishes, so you don't have to wait for the universe to vanish. It'll happen earlier than that. So he goes on and says, so all these plays and these symphonies, the height of human achievement will be gone completely. There will be no time, no space, nothing at all, just zero. He goes on, continuing on with his atheism and his nihilism, really. And he says life is meaningless. And he says his movies have characters that portray this feeling. Have a good weekend. So I'm going to ask you, the audience of the Savage Nation, since you are generally, I would think, conservative, do you agree with him? Do you believe life is meaningless? And if you don't, then how do you find meaning? Maybe you can help all of the lost atheists out there not agree with Woody Allen, not agree with the meaninglessness, not agree with his nihilism. What keeps you going? When you go to sleep at night, when you go to sleep at night and you think about the horrible world that we live in, whether it's the shoot down of an innocent group of people in an airliner by accident, or the war in the Middle East where so many thousands of people are being killed in this war, or the random violence in Chicago that is being swept under the rug by Rahm Emanuel and Barack Obama, or the meaningless president who was constantly on the road. Today he's in my hometown of San Francisco raising funds again. The world is burning and he's playing golf and raising money. It's beyond belief. So I'm asking you, it's that simple. Do you believe that life has a meaning? How do you create meaning for yourself? Now, many of you are God-fearing, so you will say to me, I would think you're going to say, well, I believe in the hereafter and our rewards are in the next world. But is that strong enough? See, I don't know whether that's a strong enough motivation for people listening to a radio show who don't believe in anything and don't believe in God. They don't know what to believe in, so they get drunk as fast as possible, as often as possible, or they get high as often as possible, and they try to fill up that void with alcohol or drugs or random sex, whatever it may be, whatever the way you do it. And don't get me wrong, I can't prove to you that there's a God. I cannot prove it other than through there's no empirical evidence that God exists other than my friends. Do you think this entire universe that we're in was created by accident? Well, who created this accident? And so we can go on and on with that question, and you don't have to be a dummy to believe in God. You see, the atheists think that they're superior. What you don't understand about atheists is that they think that if they eschew God and they can laugh at Christians and Jews, it makes them somehow superior. They look at all of the people they think are sheeple going into a house of worship, and they say, look at those fools. Look at the Jews dressed up in those black outfits. Look at those throwbacks. How can they even do that? What do they burden themselves with all of these restrictions? They don't eat pork. They don't eat shrimp. They don't do this. They don't do that. What are they, crazy? All right, well, you don't want to hurt them, but you know they're idiots. They're throwbacks. That's the assumption of the 25-year-old moron who works in Silicon Valley who makes $200,000 a year or more and thinks he's smarter than everybody. Well, okay, if that's what makes you, as they say, makes you motor turn, fine. And that works for a while. When you're young, you can think like that. And then stuff starts happening to you in life. You get older. Things happen to you. People die. People get sick. You get sick. You lose your health. And then you don't know what to think. Your wise guy friends can't help you in those moments. And so you have to turn somewhere. So what do you turn to? What do you turn to at those moments? The old joke. There are no atheists in a foxhole. But since most of us are never in a foxhole, they can continue to get away with their atheism. We're not fighting World War I where 6 million people died for no reason. We're about to have maybe World War III because of the American media trying to start a war with Russia. But okay, we're not in a foxhole, so people can continue to be atheists. But I'm asking you, the other people. I really don't want to hear from the atheists. Well, if you want to call, fine. If you're an atheist, that's fine. By the way, I was raised by an atheist. I'm going to tell you that I told you that before, and I don't think that I'm embarrassing my father by saying that. He died a long time ago, died in 1970. I was very young. We clashed from the time I was 15 years old. I don't think we had a good day between us after I can't say it. It's a family show. A doctor once said to me, when the other male appeared in the house, basically he fought with you every day of your life. We were two animals in the same household, clashing horns, smashing horns against each other. From age 15 on, and he died. I was out of the area, left New York a long time before. I was doing my thing, collecting plants, trying to earn degrees, make a living, raising a family. He never met his grandson, and then, of course, he never met his granddaughter, my children. And that was, for me, a loss. But nevertheless, maybe it wasn't a loss. But he was an atheist. I would ask him. So, first of all, let me start with me. I'm not an atheist. I had my moments. I was an atheist when I was 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. I was a wise guy. I thought I knew it all. I didn't need God. I needed nothing. What did I need? I was so full of power and self. I didn't need a stupid old God up in heaven. Some old man with a beard who was going to judge me. I didn't buy that crap. I figured that's for the idiots in the churches and the synagogues. What do they know? And besides, I was taught by all of my college teachers, all the communists from Europe who fled to America in the 50s. I was taught that God is bad. Rather, religion is evil. I was taught that religion caused more deaths than anything on earth. That's what all of the commies who fled Hitler taught me. So why would I then believe in some figure in heaven? But then as I got older and I had some bad, bad years, because of an evil, corrupt, liberal society that said, because you are a white man, you will not be hired as a professor. We will hire people far inferior to intellectually and in achievement. Your day is done. Well, when I hit that stone wall, even though I'd worked so hard, I started to look and say, wait a minute, why is this happening to me? The ACLU said some people will have to put their lives on hold so others may advance. But I was the people who had to put their lives on hold. I was one of them. So I had a pretty bad couple of years. And in those bad years, I discovered things that I'll tell you about when I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. So I'm staying out in San Francisco today. The commander-in-chief is here raising money. But don't worry about him not being in charge. I mean, he has all of the equipment he needs to launch missiles at anybody or blow up cities, put sanctions on Israel and Russia. Believe me, he's in charge even though he's raising money. He's a real commander-in-chief. He's the kind we need. He's the modern commander-in-chief. Simply with a pen, he can change the Constitution or override it. And with a BlackBerry, he can annihilate a nation. That's wonderful. There's no need for those old men in the Congress. In fact, we could save a lot of money if everyone in Congress just went home and took early retirement. I mean, Obama and the Muslim sisterhood that runs the country, they're the ones doing such a good job. And so between the Muslim sisterhood and the president, we don't really need a Congress anymore. And the Supreme Court, who needs them? They should just go home and take retirement. The Muslim sisterhood can make all these decisions. So that's why I say, you know, we have an atheistic president imposing his sense of meaninglessness on all of our institutions. And so atheism is now spreading like a cancer in the country. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Now, you know, you understand what I'm doing. I'm trying to weave the news into a philosophical topic. That's what I'm doing. No one's doing what I'm doing. It's easy for me because I think, and I think, therefore I talk. Newtown, Connecticut, WABC. Rich, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
I've got to tell you, you're the most provocative guy on the radio. You really are. You don't care what you say. You just live like there's no consequences, and that's being free. And that relates to, you don't speak often about your faith, though you do say you have faith, but that is what faith is. We really are trusting that the ramifications, the consequences of our actions are going to be doable. We know that they're in God's hands, and it's going to be okay. We live with hope, but to separate us from
animals. I think you're right. No, I do think about the consequences all the time. I know I'm living in a fascist United States of America. I know I'm being spied upon. I know that America's turned into a Stasi-like nation. Right in front of our eyes, we've let this conniver-in-chief steal our freedoms from us, and no one says anything. We know he's using thuggery and chicanery to get where he is and stay there. But I have to function as though I am somehow doing the right thing.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
So the most conniving administration in American history, they're very smart. Never underestimate your enemy. Never underestimate the enemies of freedom. Never. They're so clever that they can put sanctions on Israel and still hold on to the Jewish vote. They're so smart that they could bankrupt Israel by banning flights into Israel under the guise of safety for passengers, that even the liberal reform rabbis will be mouthing Friday night how wonderful Obama is and you should vote Democrat. They're wonderfully smart. They're so smart that they can take the worst poll numbers in history, which occurred last weekend, because the average Joe finally realized that the border is being overrun by gangbangers under the guise of bringing in children, that the next day a plane goes down. They're so smart that they can manage all of this. Never underestimate them. So they isolate Jews, they close all flights to Israel on the pretext of safety, and every Reform rabbi will be in the synagogue tomorrow night thanking Obama for protecting Jews. And then today we wake up and we have the atheist Woody Allen in a press conference saying that life is meaningless, it's all going to end, and all the great art means nothing, and he keeps making the movies. So I say, wait a minute, how do I connect that to the news? It's simple. I see solemnity attached to the arrival of the caskets in Holland with short-stepping military, as though the poor passengers who died in that plane crash were all military heroes. And I say, wait a minute, what? Something's not right with this picture. I've never seen the remains of passengers being treated as though they're war heroes. I didn't understand that. So why was Holland affording these poor people, the corpses of the poor people, really for the relatives, all the equivalent of a military funeral? Why? I asked the question, and I said, what, the atheists who don't believe in God suddenly believe in the solemnity and the meaningfulness of their deaths. Why? Well, because it has a political purpose. They can turn it into political fodder. They can attack Putin, they can attack Russia, and they can support the European Union's desire to grab the shale in order to become energy independent. It's that simple. To me, I'm just putting the pieces together. But it raises a larger question, which is life meaningless? Because after all, Woody Allen, as you know, is the equivalent of the smartest man on earth to atheists. And therefore, he says, the sun will one day burn out, it will all end, we shouldn't care anymore. And we shouldn't even care, I guess, about torture. Because if we're torturing each other, what does that matter? We're just sacks of meat with electricity keeping us animated. What does it matter if you torture an animal, to Woody Allen? We're all going to die anyway, so eat the beef now. Right? I mean, isn't that what Woody Allen is saying? There's no meaning to life? This is what happens when you have no belief system. You come to the conclusion when your life is over that the world ends. And all you start thinking about is that, gee, everything I created will go up in dust. And so you become very depressed because he has nothing in his mind, or soul rather, to carry him over to the next transition to the next phase of existence. What do you think about that? Ohio, WJR. Nick, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello, doctor. Well, I think that for someone who has based their whole life on the pursuit of truth and facts, that to be so involved in religion really surprises me.
I mean, you mean because I'm so involved with searching for the truth, I should have come to your truth that there is no God. Is that what you're saying?
I don't believe it's in my truth or your truth.
No, but you're saying because I'm such a smart guy and I have degrees in science, why do I believe in God? Well, let me explain to you. Would you say that Albert Einstein was a fairly bright man?
Yeah, I'd say that, yeah.
Do you believe he was just a hippie with long white hair who stuck his tongue out and smoked marijuana, as colleges would have you believe with all those posters? You know that Einstein believed in God in his later years. Did you know that?
I do. And
you, did. In other words, he said the farther out he goes in his attempts to understand the perimeters of the universe, the more he believed that there had to be a creator. When I saw that, I said, okay, that's good enough for me.
Okay, but just because Einstein, one guy, says that he believes in God doesn't necessarily mean automatically.
That's right, and I'm not here to prove to you that you or make you go to church. I'm not asking you to go eat a wafer. I'm not saying you should go back to your what are you, a lapsed Catholic, no doubt?
No, sir. I was brought up religion-free, let's put it that way.
All right, so you were raised an atheist. You're entitled to be an atheist in America. This is not a nation that imposes its theocracy on people, except, I mean, if you lived in a Muslim land, you wouldn't be able to be that. You know that.
Right. The part I don't like is that just automatically because someone is religious, whether it be Christian or whatever else, their belief is automatically assumed to be correct, and if you are atheist, you are wrong, but it's okay. Because
you don't understand. I'm not saying you're wrong. You have to live with that, not me. You have to grow old. You're obviously a young guy, right, Nick?
Actually, I'm 40. I mean, I'm not real young.
No, you're young. You're young. You haven't had any major illnesses yet, have you?
No, but my family's been through plenty. And what I normally see is the older people get, the more they seek God. You know, young.
That's
people.
That's what I'm saying. Have you been in an emergency room in your lifetime for yourself?
And so have my children.
No, I'm saying for you. Have you had an accident or injury where you needed to go to an emergency room?
Yes.
And you didn't, what did you believe in those moments of fear and doubt?
I hope the heck the doctor could help me.
All right, so you believed that modern medicine was your God. I understand that, and I'm not here to say to you, okay, be religious or you're a fool. I didn't say that, did I?
No, but it's looked down upon. You made it quite.
I'm not looking down on you. I don't go to houses of worship. I feel uncomfortable around congregations of any kind.
I guess.
Because I'm an independent thinker, I like to think about existence in my own way. I do love the fact that we have houses of worship, and I would defend their right to exist forever. I respect people who go to houses of worship. It's never worked for me, though. I've always been made to feel that I didn't belong there. Any house of worship I ever went into, I never felt right in it.
In somewhere of your position, I guess my question is, religion at best is a hypothesis that you can't prove until it's too late. So how do you believe?
Okay, you could say that. Well, there's a song that goes like this. Every time I see a newborn baby cry, every time I see a leaf or touch the sky, I know, God, I know, I know, I know. In other words, how do you account for existence? It's just a mechanical accident?
I've always believed in a God of some sort from the beginning of time. Doesn't mean they're all right, from the Greeks to the Romans to the Native Americans. And everybody's God is different. We don't know. Everybody needs something.
Wait, are you saying you believe in God or people believed in a God?
People believe in a God. It seems people need something to believe in because they can't deal with life itself.
All right, but you're better than most people from the beginning of time. You're stronger than most people, better than Native Americans, Catholics, Protestants, Muslims, Jews, and Buddhists. You don't have to believe in anything. You can only believe in yourself.
I'm not saying I'm stronger than them, but yes, I believe in myself. I don't feel that I need someone
else. I'm a big believer in self-reliance, but there will come a day, as sure as I'm talking with you on the radio, that fundamental belief in yourself as all you need will not be there for you. And I'm not putting you down, and I'm not hoping that day comes. I hope you live to 110 and you never have such a day. But when that day comes, you're going to remember this conversation, and I hope you know you can grab onto something. Well, if we're having an interesting conversation. It is somewhat interesting and related to the horrors of the world, I would say. And I would think that anyone listening to this Drive Time radio show across America on 230 stations may be saying, wait a minute, I think about these things sometimes. This is not a very political topic. Do I believe in God or don't I? Maybe you believe in God, but you don't go to church. Maybe you believe in God and don't go to synagogue. Maybe you believe in Buddha, but you don't go to a Buddhist temple. Maybe you believe in Shiva, but you don't go to a Hindu temple. Maybe instead, when you feel religious, you have a pastrami sandwich or a combi sandwich or an Indian meal. Let's say you're a lapsed Hindu working in Silicon Valley, and you think it's nonsense to believe in all those gods with all the hands and the noses. But sometimes you want to contact your ancestors. See what? You go to an Indian buffet? Or for many Jews, eating a bagel and lox is their expression of Judaism. And we call them bagel and lox Jews. I'm serious about that. I don't believe in that stuff, but I have a bagel and lox. I like to be around Jews. So I go to Katz's and have a sandwich. I don't know what they do. There are people who use food as a cultural connection rather than a religious connection. I understand that as well. So if you want to chime in about this and you want to talk about how you give life meaning, I'd really appreciate it. The phone number is 855-48728. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. This will kill the whole show. Turn it off. That's too much for me. Next, we'll be doing Mule Train with Frankie Lane. That'll be the last refuge of talk radio is to play Frankie Lane's Mule Train. So we're living in an age of atheism. We have a government that's clearly atheistic and respects nothing but themselves. This is what happens when you have an atheist in the White House. Why are there so many vampire movies? When I'm scanning for movies at night, when I see vampire, I turn it off. And they're very clever. The media guys who write the stuff up, the girls, it's always like, a very clever plot about, and it starts, and then the middle of it, and then they find it's a vampire, turn it right, it won't even go. Could it be that Obama's a vampire? Would that explain the problems we're having? Maybe someone should do a script about his life after he's out of office, if he ever leaves office, called Untrue Blood. Would that work? So Woody Allen believes that life is meaningless. Not that he's a great philosopher, but it's an interesting kickoff point for that topic because the Malaysian plane disaster, the fraudster-in-chief is landing in the San Francisco area today, raising money while the world is burning. At the same time, we have a lawless government in California. Last night, Governor Jerry Brown signed a law that would reduce the number of legal immigrants eligible for deportation. after being convicted of a misdemeanor, even for crimes such as child molestation and an identity theft. That's what Governor Brown did. So he goes against the will of the people. Obama goes against the will of the people, and they call themselves great liberals. But they're really great atheists. Atheists believe only in power and only in themselves. They don't believe there's any consequences to their actions. Do you understand why we are seeing lawlessness from the State House to the White House? Do you understand it's because they believe they are a law unto themselves, that there are no consequences to their actions? They realize there's no competition because there's no media. And the people have no power. We're nothing but serfs to them. And they figure since there's no God, they can do whatever they want. They'll get away with it now. What do they care about tomorrow? There is no tomorrow. They figure they'll, whenever they die, they'll die, and there's been no consequences. It's very interesting to me that it's all connected to a loss of faith in God. This godlessness in America has led to a meltdown of our republic itself. This godlessness has led to an indifferent, craven presidency, unlike any before ever seen in this nation. And whether it be the State House, as I say, Cuomo in New York, the State House in California, they act as though there are no consequences because they don't believe in anything except pure power. By the way, this is how communism worked. You don't understand this. The communists were atheists. The communists believed in the state. The communists believed the state was all. The communists believed the state would always protect them. The communists didn't believe in any afterlife or tomorrow, so they did what they wanted. And they imposed their will upon the people. The people became less and less and less, which is what's happened in this country with this age of atheism. That's one man's opinion. And I think that it's a correct opinion. That's how I see it. Meanwhile, in Israel, Israel's fighting the war of all wars for the West against Islam. It's a war between Islam and the West going on in Israel and Gaza. It's a proxy war between Islamism and basically faith-based Judaism. You don't know that. No one has written that either, but that's what it is. Israel's not the canary in the coal mine. Israel is facing the new Muslim crusade on the battlefield. Make no mistake about it, Islam is on the rise on the planet. And this ties to the whole issue with Russia. We are permitting the atheists in the media who hate him primarily because of his social stances. I'll leave it at that. They hate Putin because of his social stances, and I'll leave it at that. You can fill in the blanks. And as a result, our natural ally against the rising tide of radical Islam is being marginalized by the vermin in the media. I'll repeat that in other words in case you missed it. The Russians are our natural ally in this world, which is aflame because of radical Islam. The Russians are our natural ally in this battle for the survival, our own survival, the long-range survival of everything you believe in. They're killing homosexuals. They're killing women. They're killing their own daughters. You're talking about people who live in the first century. How in the world can you support this mentality? How in the world are you that stupid that you cannot understand what's going on this planet? And unfortunately, the Jews are on the front lines in this battle. They were put there in 1947 to be God's warriors. They were put there to be on the front lines in this battle. That's what happened. They were chosen. But you know, just because you're chosen doesn't mean it's going to be easy. Let me explain that to you. You say the Jews are the chosen people. What are they chosen for? To fight the world's battles? I guess so. God said you're the chosen people. Now do your work. He didn't say you're the chosen people. Now just enjoy yourself. God said you're the chosen people. Well, guess what? With this honor comes a great responsibility. And then you look at what's going on. And I'm saying to you, why is Putin being so roundly demonized by the vermin in the media? The answer is not solely for the shootdown or Ukraine. It goes way beyond that. It's because of Putin's social policies. Do I have to spell it out for you? You can't figure it out? Who's really attacking him and why? As I point out in my forthcoming book, which is really not but weeks away, The Coming Civil War, Stop the Coming Civil War is the actual title. It was originally The Coming Civil War, but for reasons that I can't describe to you, the title was changed to Stop the Coming Civil War, which is, of course, my message, Stop the Coming Civil War. In this book, I argue that the worldwide New World Liberal Order has only one enemy left, and that enemy is Vladimir Putin. They want to crush him because he's the only enemy of the New World Liberal Order. You don't understand that. And of course, need I say, is Israel. Israel is also in the way of the roller coaster, the steamroller, called the New World Liberal Order.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We had a good conversation today about how we can take further steps. And we're doing this for one simple reason. The people in the Palestinian territories, the people in Israel, are all living under the threat or reality of immediate violence. And this needs to end for everybody. We need to find a way forward that works. And it's not violence.
He's right about that. I mean, you got to do something. Hand-wringing always works wonders, as you well know. So Neville Ketchup Chamberlain goes to the Middle East and says we've got to do something, but he doesn't know what it is. The answer is for Egypt to unleash its army onto Gaza and in a pincer movement go into Gaza City and crush the Hamas rocket factories, and that'll be the end of it. Blow up the tunnels, crush the rocket factories, and then maybe there could be peace. That's the only solution. So the world is a mess right now because we have a vacuum coming out of the White House. And as you well know, nature abhors a vacuum. One of the primary rules of physics is that nature abhors a vacuum. America was once the citadel for liberty around the world. It's now become nothing, an empty shell, because we have an empty individual in the White House. And so we see a war brewing in the Middle East. We see people dying for no reason over the Ukraine. Over Ukraine. We see people dying here, dying there. We see a government out of control, a rogue government stepping on the people. We see a rogue government in New York State, a rogue government in California, making laws up as they wish. And then we wake up and we read the filmmaker that we've all maybe liked or laughed with, Woody Allen, gives a speech that life is meaningless, it's all going to end. What does it really mean? So all of the great works of art will go with the earth as the sun burns out. And so, therefore, what's the meaning of existence? So this is what happens when you're 78 and you've believed only in yourself all your life and you realize that when you die, the world dies. You think that the world dies with you. Now, he's a filmmaker and a fine artist. I don't particularly like his message. I think he's very funny. But the point is he triggered a thought in my head. How do you find meaning in life? In all of this confusion in the world, what do you do for meaning? I'm talking to you, sir. You, lady, you stepping into your Lexus somewhere in New Jersey, how do you find meaning in your life? Juggling family, bags of groceries, whatever. A husband you don't particularly care for anymore. How do you justify all of this? How do you fill this void? What do you believe in? What if you're this family? Here's a story just came out from in my backyard, Half Moon Bay. A young man, 26 years old, digs a hole on a Northern California beach. The hole collapses and he gets trapped in the sand for 5 minutes and dies. He's on vacation. He dug a 10-foot deep hole at a state beach, standing in it around 5:30 last night when the sand started caving in around him. Right? He was on a campground just on vacation. Well, all of a sudden, 30 people, including the man's friends, bystanders, frantically dug with their hands, buckets, and other improvised tools to expose his head. Right? They were able to free his head in 5 minutes just as firefighters arrived at the scene. When they got there, he was dead. That's all. 5 minutes, you're dead. So what do you do in a case like that? God punished him for what? He did something wrong? What did he do wrong? He did something wrong, so God said, go dig a hole in the sand and you'll be buried alive. That's all. It's reincarnation. He was buried alive because he did something in the last life. How do you make sense of these things? So let me take you back in time. Let me take you back to a time before there was life on Earth. Let's go back to a world in space and a world in time. And let's go back to the story of our world history. Right? What was there? Well, we don't know what was there. It was nothing. It was nothing, apparently. It was a world floating around an entity in space and time. And then life began. We don't know how. Then we had the age of fishes, the age of the coal swamps. And then came the age of reptiles, the first birds and the first mammals. Then the age of mammals appeared. Then there came monkeys, apes, and submen. Then Neanderthal, the Rhodesian man. The first true men came, and then there came primitive thought. Then cultivation began, and they were no longer hunters and gatherers. They were cultivating crops. And then we saw primitive Neolithic civilizations. Then we looked at early Egypt, Sumeria. Then we saw primitive nomadic peoples. Then we saw the first seagoing peoples. And then we saw the primitive Aryans. Then we see the last Babylonian Empire and the Empire of Darius I. And then we come to the early history of the Jews, the priests and prophets in Judea. And that's the point at which we're going to talk about right now, because this is a very important departure point, the early history of the Jews, the Hebrews, a Semitic people who were not very important in their own time, but extremely important in the world's history, in later history of the world. Not very important in their time. They were settled in Judea long before 1000 B.C., and their capital city after that time was Jerusalem. Now, the story of the early Hebrews, the early Jews, is interwoven with the great empires that existed on either side of them. Egypt to the south, the empires of Syria, Assyria, and Babylon to the north. And that's where the Jews appeared. And what did the Jews do that changed the history of the world? Well, they produced a written literature, a world history, a collection of laws and chronicles, psalms, books of wisdom, poetry and fiction, and political utterances. And the Christians came to know that as the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible. And that appeared in the 4th or 5th century B.C. That's an important thing for you to know. The effect is still going on today. The Jewish effect on the world is still going on today. Christians arose from the Jews, then the Muslims followed the Christians. And modern Muslims, of course, want to live in peace with their neighbors, but the throwbacks, the Islamists, want to take the world back to 1,000 years ago, more than 1,000 years ago. They want homosexuals to be murdered. They want hands to be cut off prisoners who steal. They want to perform heinous operations on women and little girls to make certain they have no sexual pleasure. They want women not to drive. They want women not to write. They want women not to read. They want women to walk around in throwback costumes that should be banned in any Western nation that had a brain. And so we have this clash of civilizations going on right in front of our eyes here in America. You see women walking around in 15th century costumes that are not even in the Quran. The burqa is not even mentioned in the Quran. And yet we permit this outfit to be worn in America like a crazed Halloween costume. Turning women into chattel, lower than a goat, lower than a cow, walking around like a slave in our own society that allegedly is free of slavery. We permit a culture to enter this country, if you want to call it a culture, that is nothing but indentured slavery for women. And who is at war with this culture? The Jews. Why? Because they want to crush the Jews, kill the Jews, drive the Christians out of the Middle East. They're doing it in front of your eyes. Every preacher in America this Sunday should be talking about one thing only. Not about what Jesus did thousands of years ago, but what the Muslims are doing to their Christian brethren right now, whether it be in Syria or in Iraq. That's all every church should be talking about this Sunday. That's all that should be in every church in this country. But instead, you're going to hear the rubbish, the mumbling, the mumbo-jumbo rubbish that priests are only capable of these days. The fire and brimstone that you want to hear is long gone from the churches and the synagogues. There is no fire and there's no brimstone. There's no guidance. Is there any God? I don't know. You see, because God was a vengeful God. God was not a kind God. That's something you have to understand. You say, oh, fire and brimstone is dead and buried. No, it isn't. God is a vengeful God. He still exists and he is vengeful. Make no mistake about it. And your Christian brethren, the churches are being blown up that have been there for 2,000 years in Mosul and we don't lift a finger because the atheistic president of ours took our troops out and left no force there to protect anything. Churches are being blown up. Christians are being killed. They're being driven out of cities by the Islamists. And so you want the Jews to stop fighting for their survival in Israel? You want them to stop fighting against these Islamists in Gaza called Hamas? You still want a two-state solution when you could see what they can do from a little strip of land called Gaza? You give the Islamists, what, the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, the ancient Hebrew lands? And what do you think they will do in Judea and Samaria? Do you think that they're going to live in peace with their Christian and Jewish neighbors? Are you insane? Take a look at what they're doing in Gaza. It's the end of the two-state solution. It's over forever. There can never be any peace as long as you have Islamism. And that's the story. That's the story that we're living through today. We are seeing what happens when America loses its influence in the world. Not so much because we lost our power, but because we elected an atheist fundraiser, however you want to put it. I mean, I don't have to come up with 100 different adjectives to describe what we know we have in the White House. A man who is imposing a negativity on this nation that is permeating every cop on every street. See, I talk to people in the street. Last night after I left the radio, I went up to North Beach in San Francisco. I love to walk around the North Beach district, which is the Italian district. And I was through working, and it was a hot day, and it was very much like a Fellini evening, a Fellini afternoon. And I wandered up to my friend up in the Pinocchio restaurant, Giovanni. I sat with him outside. We ate some salmon that he had flown. His friend flew in from Alaska. I wasn't even in the mood to drink. And we talked, and we talked, and we talked. We talked about what the street is like. What is the street like? Because he understands the street better than I do. He said the street is very negative. People are very frightened. They're very lost. They don't know what to believe in. And then we talked about calamari. I was more interested in that. He began as a calamari fisherman when he came here from Italy in 1969. And he told me what it was like in those days, that the waters off Monterey were teeming with squid or calamari, and how much money you could make as a young immigrant just fishing, just an ordinary fisherman. $500 a week in those days was a lot of money. Right off the boat, the land of opportunity, came from the impoverished island of Sicily. And he gathered calamari just as a deckhand on a fishing boat. And those were the great days of fishing off the coast of California. But they're back. Right now, they can't even find enough boats to fill with the calamari, the squid that are back, because we're in an El Nino again. See, the cycles keep coming back, no matter what the liars in the media will tell you about global this and global that and climate change. There's a cycle. A cycle to everything. The sun rises and the sun also sets. 7 years of feast and 7 years of famine. There's an El Nino and an El Niña. The fish run in one cycle and they don't run in another. And it goes on and on. Sea levels have not risen, but the morons in the media writing newspaper articles such as, why is there such silence about sea level rising, which has not yet occurred, but will occur in the Bay Area? See, there's no proof of it. But they're already concerned about what might happen, like Woody Allen says the sun is going to burn out. Again, the atheists, the deniers, the liars. And so here we are. You're listening to Michael Savage with an early Friday, I guess, sermon, or if you're of another religion, a Sunday sermon, or if you're of another religion, a Saturday sermon, I suppose. I guess I'm sermonizing. Am I sermonizing too much? Am I sermonizing too much for you, my audience, that I cherish so much, that without you I wouldn't exist? You know that without my audience I would cease to exist. I've come to that conclusion. What motivates me? Why do I get up every morning to do this show? You know, I'm asking you a question. Well, since I'm leading the conversation, I should answer it first. Let me lead by example. What motivates Michael Savage to get up every morning and to create a show, put things together in a palatable sense and make sense out of a perplexing world? Are you perplexed? I'll be right back on the Savage
Nation. Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
Bye.
I guess the question is, can God exist in the age of Instagram? Instead of young girls dreaming of having a family and getting married, they dream of posing half naked on Instagram for a moment's fame, I guess. And their mothers approve of it because the mothers are no better than they are. So let's go back to the ancient time of America before Obama came along and destroyed everything. Almost in a biblical sense, he's almost destroyed all of Western civilization without even trying. Or has he been trying? So who are the Jews? Why are they fighting in Gaza? What does this really mean historically? Well, I have to give you a little history in order for you to understand. If you don't know the past, you don't know where we are today. You don't know where the future is going. So we go back to the Bible, the ancient Bible. I told you where the Jews appeared and when they appeared. In the old days, the Bible consisted only of the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of the Old Testament as we know it. And then there were other books that have since been incorporated with these five books of Moses into the present Hebrew Bible. They would be the Chronicles, the Psalms, and Proverbs, for example. And so the baby talk now, the accounts of the creation of the world, of Adam and Eve, and of the flood, and with which the Bible begins, happened to run closely parallel with similar legends from Babylonia. They were common beliefs of all the Semitic peoples. They were not limited only to the Jewish people. And so, too, even in the stories of Moses and of Samson, if you look at them, they have Sumerian and Babylonian parallels. So there's nothing unique in those stories. But with the story of Abraham and forward begins something very unique to the Jewish race. That's the beginning of Abraham. And Abraham, by the way, is the father of three of the world's monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Abraham is the father of these three religions. You should know that. And after a long sojourn in Egypt and after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness under the leadership of Moses, the children of Abraham were now grown to a host of 12 tribes. They invaded the land of Canaan. I'm getting to Gaza from the Arabian deserts to the east. This was done 1600 BC, maybe to 1300 BC. We don't know exactly when. But this land, the coastal land, was in the hands not of the Canaanites, but of newcomers, those Aegean peoples, the Philistines. And they had cities. The cities were Gaza, Gath, Ashdod, Ashkelon, and Joppa. Successfully withstood the attacks by the Hebrews. Did you know that? The Jews tried to conquer Gaza, Gath, Ashdod, Ashkelon, and Jaffa. But the Aegean peoples, the Philistines, withstood the attacks. And for many generations, the children of Abraham remained an obscure people, living in the hilly backcountry of the Middle East. And the Hebrews were ruled by priestly judges at that time, selected by the elders of the people, like our Congress. And then they chose a king. And I'll come back to tell you more about the past, the present, and the future.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Michael Savage.
Either they're crazy, super crazy, or totally insane. Most people who are legitimate and sane don't go into politics.
You want me to continue? Hot Talk 560, you know, there's a live audience. KSFO. I get an answer in a reading. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. It's very hard to know when you're sitting in a room alone in a radio studio and trying to fathom what millions of people or whatever the QM is or the AQH is for that time period anywhere in the country when you have hundreds of stations and people are tuning in and out, their minds are distracted, they're on the internet. What do they want to hear? And so I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I have to go with what I want to say rather than what you want to hear. I have to assume that what I'm speaking about puts the war in the Middle East, the shoot down of the airplane, the atheism coming out of the White House, the lawlessness coming out of the White House. It puts it in context. And the only way you can understand what is going on in this country is if you know what went on in the world and where we are historically and where we might be tomorrow. So I'm going to just continue. Just for a few more minutes, and then I'll take some calls. What was the primary difference between the Jewish idea of God and the idea of God that preceded it? The idea that God was invisible and remote, meaning an invisible God, was new to the world. Because all other peoples on earth at that time had gods that lived in images and lived in temples. And if the image was smashed and the temple was knocked down, that God died out. But this was a brand new idea, the idea that the God of the Jews in the heavens high above priests and sacrifices in the existed. That was something new. And this God of Abraham was believed in by the Jews. And they believed that they were chosen to restore Jerusalem and make it the capital of righteousness in the world. And they were unified in their belief that they were joined together in a sense of common destiny. And so they returned to Jerusalem after their captivity in Babylon. Now, to many of you who are religious, this is history that you know. To many of you who are not religious or younger and have had no teachings in any of this, it's odd, all of it. But it's very important you understand it, because otherwise you cannot understand what's going on in the world, nor can you understand where this president fits, nor this country fits, where Israel fits, where Gaza fits. You can't understand any of it. Because if you take all of what's going on out of context, you can come up with the wrong conclusions. You will draw the wrong conclusions. And only those who know the past can understand the present. I have to repeat it to you. That's why history is so important. Maybe it's boring. I don't know. I went through school. I hated history. I didn't like it. 1843 and 1896 and old costumes and swords. I don't know, muskets. I paid very little attention to it. I remember the history Regents exam drove me crazy in New York. It just frightened me. I didn't like Regents exams to begin with. So let me put this idea down for a while and ask you again about prophecy. How can there be prophecy unless there's another world? In other words, Woody Allen, let's go back again to Woody Allen. Woody Allen typifies and embodies atheism. He always has. He was the ultimate Jewish atheist. Let's not forget he's Jewish, and everyone knows that. And for most Americans, he represents the Jew. You don't know that either. Which is why he became so popular, is because he made a mockery of Jewish men. And that was acceptable to the average American person. Anyone who mocked a Jew was a good Jew. So therefore, they liked laughing at Jews, and they chose Woody Allen's image, the neurotic, frightened, cowardly Jew. That took. And he made a good living at it. He's made a good buck at that. Yeah, very good buck. Now, he's not the first person to denigrate his own people by denigrating himself and pretending he represented all of his people. I've made this example before. In the 1940s, long before my time, there was a black actor named Stepan Fetchit. He was big. Stepan Fetchit. That he gave himself that name. Stepan Fetchit. Think about the servility of his name itself. And what did he do to make the white man laugh? He played the servile black. Yeah, man, I's coming, boss. Remember those days? Remember those days? Well, the white people loved it because he fulfilled the stereotype of the servile, stupid African man. And he made a fortune. So in essence, Woody Allen is in the long tradition of debasing his own people to make a buck. It doesn't mean he's not funny. I mean, I've laughed at his movies. Who could ever forget him with Annie Hall running from a lobster in a kitchen? Who could ever forget him in any of his wonderful roles of the frightened Schlemiel? We loved him in that role. So now he's an old man. He's 78. And forget the molestation stuff. That's nothing to an atheist. I mean, if you don't believe in God and you don't believe in a hereafter, you molest. That's all. As long as you don't get caught, what's the difference? Whether he did it or not. I'm not saying he did. I don't know if he did it. But it wouldn't have mattered to him if he did it, as long as he couldn't be seen. In other words, if there's no God, what's the difference what he does when no one can catch him? So that's why he doesn't think he's guilty, because in his mind, he isn't guilty, even if he is. So what I'm getting at, he gives a speech while promoting his new movie saying life is meaningless and it has no morals, obviously. The sun will one day burn out. And the whole world, the universe, will end. And he says all the great works of Shakespeare, Beethoven, Da Vinci, all be gone. And he says, so you won't have to wait for the universe to vanish, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on to say, so all of this achievement, all the Shakespearean plays and these symphonies and the height of human achievement will be gone completely. He means his movies will be gone as well. He's just relating. He said there'll be nothing, absolutely nothing. No time, no space, nothing at all, just zero. So he says, so what does it really mean? So it's another old man coming to the end of his existence, who's an atheist, and he doesn't know what's waiting for him. He figures nothing. Nothing. The electricity in his brain will stop, and he will stop with it. He doesn't believe in a soul, and I don't think he's alone in that. I really don't know what percent of Americans believe in that or don't. I don't really care. But I want to reiterate, I'm not a particularly religious man. I was raised in an atheistic household. My father was an atheist from Russia, my mother was a kind of very faithful believer, not a religious, but she really knew God existed. She did things that made me know that, and she had such tragedy before, well, the whole family, but the way she dealt with it was one thing. The way he dealt with it was another. The way I deal with it is another. I learned to be an entertainer because of my mother's sadness and tragedy. And did I ever tell you this story? Should I wander into this, Neil, or is this a minefield about to go off under my feet? Go for it. I'll go for it. No, I'll just continue to tell my story, and that's it. In other words, if you don't know my story, then you don't know who you're listening to or why. So my mother was very deeply saddened by what happened to my brother. And she couldn't fathom what happened. She didn't know why. She had a healthy daughter, then a healthy son, me. Then she had another boy who looked perfectly fine, blonde hair, blue eyes, perfectly fine. And then in a short period of time, they found that he was not normal. He couldn't see, couldn't hear, couldn't speak. He was basically a vegetable, so they thought. Well, it wrecked the whole family. And my mother would cry endlessly in the apartment. No one knew this. And what does a little boy do when a mother is crying? He tries to make her happy. So I would entertain her. I would do stupid things. I became an entertainer for my mother. I would imitate people. I'd put on faces. I'd make sounds and noises. And I'd wipe the tears away. She'd stop crying. She would smile. No one knows this story. I rarely tell it to anybody. Even in my closest family members never heard this story. I learned to talk and to entertain because of the tragedy with my brother. You say, what's the big deal? People die every day. Stop talking about it so much. All right, you don't have to listen to me. I'm just telling you how one man's soul operates, period. That's all. If you don't like it, go listen to somebody else. What do you want from me? The hecklers in the audience, the cyber bullies, the liars, the thieves, the perverts, the degenerates. They don't want anyone to do anything positive in the world. They sit in their pajamas at home in their filthy underwear, writing hate about everybody. That's all they do. Day and night. Hate. That's all they do is put on the sites. You Google my name and the haters are there. The 30 books I wrote, the PhD, the two master's degrees, the achievements, that's not there to the filthy, dirty, don't get me started because it gets me furious, it infuriates me. Because I'd like to strangle them with my bare hands if I could. But they're all cyber bullies. They go on under anonymous. Anonymous, they won't identify themselves. So it affected me in that way. I learned to entertain my mother. And you can see I can go from the maudlin to the enraged man in 1 second. In 1 second, I can turn from the kind of maudlin, sad guy into an enraged bull in 1 second. It all rages inside my soul, and in that sense, I'm very much alive from top to bottom. But I also learned how to talk to audiences and animals because of my silent brother. I wrote about this in one of my books. They said don't talk to him. He was sitting in a high chair, strapped in there, Jerome, and they said to me he was blind, he was deaf, and he couldn't speak. And when no one was looking, I would sneak into the kitchen to talk to him. But listen to how primitive the... I want you to hear how primitive the world was in the 1940s in the doctor's professions. They told me, the healthy brother, don't go in that... Don't talk to your brother. You'll bother him. So what do you mean I'll bother him if he's deaf? All I could think of was, if he's deaf, how could I bother him if he can't hear me? So I would talk to him anyway because I loved him. I just loved him so much. And I would whistle to him because I didn't think he could understand words. And he would smile when I whistled to him. So I was like, wait a minute, if he can understand the whistle, he knows his brother's here. And then I hear the voice, Michael, what are you doing in there? Are you bothering Jerome? Come on, get out of there. And then he was left alone to die and he'd live in his hell. And then it goes forward and he's given away to all. Listen to this now, to show you about the doctors in those days, how backwards they were. They decide that for the sake of the healthy children, they're going to give him away to a home. I want you to think about the profound impact on the, quote, healthy children, that we were responsible for sending him to hell. So that day he left, I have a story in me I never wrote yet. In fact, I don't want to give it away right now. I don't want to put everything out in 1 minute. I'm actually decided 2 days ago in the morning, I decided to write yet one more story before I stop writing altogether. And it's going to be that whole story of from the time he was born in the 1940s, and there was no television. It was the age of radio. The whole thing set around radio. See, it's why I'm so great on the radio. I grew up in the age of radio. There's no one in radio except me who actually grew up in the pre-television world. I grew up in the world of radio. That's why I am who I am on the radio. That's why I do things no one else dares do on the radio, because I am radio. I come from the age of radio. I'm pre-television. So what I'm saying is, the day they gave him away, I'm going to end it right here. I'm trying to show you something. The day came that they had to give him away to a state home. It was a horrible place on Staten Island. I think Wildwick, I don't know the name of the home, a snake pit that years later was shown to be a horrible. You think the VA hospitals are bad? They took this little five-year-old helpless boy, and because the doctors were such quacks in those days, they took him away in the streets. Now, in those days, everyone knew everyone. I lived in a tenement in the Bronx. 6, 8 stories, I don't know what it was. Everybody knew everybody. It was like a Sajat Ray movie. If you've ever watched Indian movies about India, Calcutta, the teeming masses, well, that's my childhood. So those are the days when if you see movies, you know, retro movies, you see women sitting outside in front of the building in chairs. The children are playing in the streets. In the summer, they'd open up the hydrants and kids would run in it. That was our swimming pool, was the gutter and the water. It felt good to me. I enjoyed it. It was cold and fresh. And the women would protect you from any, you know, potential whatever. But there was no potential danger there. Because nobody would speed down the street. There were no guns going off. The perverts would be thrown off the top of a building. If there was even a hint of a perv in the neighborhood, the men would find him and throw him off a building. That's all. There were no pervs around. They didn't wait for a judge to tell them what they could do. They either beat him up or threw him off a building. So we had very, very a good childhood in that sense. And nevertheless, so everyone knew everyone. So the day comes, they hear that they're giving away the boy. Everybody is in the street. Everybody is in the street. And there's crying. And there's sadness. And the whole neighborhood sees this going on. And my little brother's taken away. I don't even know who put him. I don't remember. Two men. I don't know. And that was the beginning of something, and it was also the end of something. And what I'm saying to you is, what am I supposed to believe? That God made a mistake? It was just a mistake in the hospital? Somebody made a mistake somewhere and they did this to him? Or there was a neurological defect that created my brother and there was no reason for him? Well, I actually think he was created like that for me. I believe that my brother was created that way for me to be as articulate as I am. And as impassioned as I am. And in that sense, I'm very guilty. I have to live for two people. I've told you that before. Otherwise, there's no explanation for me to be alive this long. Not with my genetic inheritance. Not with the stress level I've lived with. I should have been dead a long time ago. But the point is that God had a certain fate for me. And I think it had to happen. That he had to be punished for me to live the way I am. Would you believe this? And that's the story I'm going to tell one day in a new novel. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. It's Savage Nation. So, I mean, I derive wisdom from many different sources. It's not just simply the Old Testament or the New Testament or the Book of Buddha or Native American folklore. I mean, there's wisdom in all peoples. And at the end of the day, all religions can be boiled down, with the exception of one religion, to one statement, which is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The only religion that doesn't teach that would be the religion that is burning churches and killing Christians in Iraq. I'll let you figure out which side you should be on and why you should be very worried indeed that we have the Muslim sisterhood running America, in my opinion. So let me read you something from the teaching of Buddha. It's a short thing, and see where I'm coming from. At one time, the tail and the head of a snake quarreled as to which should be the front. The tail said to the head, "You're always taking the lead. It's not fair. You ought to let me lead sometimes." The head answered, "It is the law of our nature that I should be the head. I cannot change places with you." But the quarrel went on and on, and one day the tail fastened itself to a tree and thus prevented the head from proceeding. When the head became tired with the struggle, the tail had its own way, with the result that the snake fell into a pit of fire and perished. In the world of nature, there always exists an appropriate order, and everything has its own function. If this order is disturbed, the functioning is interrupted, and the whole order will go to ruin. That's what's going on in the world, because we have the tail of the snake leading the country instead of the head. If this order is disturbed, the functioning is interrupted and the whole order will go to ruin. The whole order of the world has been destroyed because of the fact that we have no leadership or the wrong leadership. in the highest places. I stand by that word. There's nothing else I can say to you. You want me to prove it to you? I'll give it to you. Here's a late news story, just came out a minute long ago, to show you how disordered the world is under Obama. U.S. Navy Admiral says he's open to the idea of giving the Chinese Navy a tour of a carrier. I swear to God. Admiral Jonathan Greener, Chief of Naval Operations, said that he's open to let the Chinese tour a U.S. aircraft carrier based in Japan. This is what I mean by the whole order going to ruin, because we have the tail instead of the head running America. Savage Nation, here or be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. So the world is at war because we have an atheist who has abandoned his duties as president on the international stage. Nationally, he continues only to attack his political opponents, because that's all a community organizer can do. He knows nothing about running the world. He knows only how to defeat his domestic enemies. And then we lead to this point where you ask yourself, what's going to happen in this world? It's getting worse by the minute. Where does this end? I don't know where it ends. I know where we are now. And I predicted this. This is hilarious. This just came out a minute ago. Republicans weigh $1.5 billion for border search, far less than Obama wants. I have to laugh because the con man in chief started by asking for $2 billion, remember? The next day, the con man asked for $4 billion, knowing he'd get half of that. And sure enough, here comes Boehner. I'm not giving you $4 billion. I'll give you half of that. You got one and a half. So Obama's laughing. Schmendrick, I never saw anything like this. Day one, Obama says, I need $2 billion as a slush fund for the influx of gangbangers covered by children at the U.S.-Mexico border. The next day, Obama raises it to $3.7 billion, doubles it, in other words, and then Schmendrick on the Republican side says, you're not getting 3.7. I'm going to show you how tough I am. We're giving you $1.5 billion. So now what the press is reporting is Republicans offering far less than Obama wants. Okay, that's the world I'm living in. I have to look at this and I have to remember things to even tell you what's going on. Now, what's going on in Israel is even more phenomenal. Israel-Gaza battle, there are things going on that you can't even believe. The news is not making it out here. It's a big story. Did you know that the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, has flattened three cities? They've destroyed Hamas in East Rafah, Khan Yunis, and Shajaya. They dismantled the tunnel network in these cities. But they need a major battle right now, they're saying, a decisive war after these victories. And yet the Palestinians will not agree to a peace. They want it only on their terms because they're insane. And, of course, they have the UN, they have American media, European communist media, socialist media on their side. And they won't stop until they get what they want. So Israel's going to continue to fight. In some ways, Hamas has won a great victory in disrupting civilian air traffic to and from Israel. I told you yesterday that Obama basically put sanctions onto Israel under the guise of protecting people. Okay? I told you that yesterday. Now everyone's repeating it. Even Mustache is doing it today. I guess he listened to my show bashing him yesterday. Former UN ambassador John Bolton is saying that. I mean, all right, fine. So they listen to the show. They hear what's really going on instead of their friends in the media. I'm glad I could be a day ahead of them. But you don't even know what's going on in Israel. It's in this war. It's beyond belief. I was studying it before. And I'm going to read it to you. I'll read it to you right now. You're looking at a Gaza City suburb home to 100,000 Palestinians called Shajaya. It was razed to the ground. It doesn't exist anymore. And when asked about Hamas's defeat in this suburb, Shajaya, where this was once home to 100,000 Palestinians but razed to the ground by the IDF, the head of the Hamas Politburo chief, Khalid Meshal in Qatar, said that he has no comment because Hamas was winning the war against the IDF. And he's confident of being able to keep going for a long time. So when he was asked about the city being razed to the ground, the Hamas Politburo chief, Khalid Meshal in Qatar, said nothing. He refused to comment. So what happened next? Since Israel was told they don't want to call for peace, Israel learns of Meshal's comments. So the IDF was then instructed last night to demolish the empty home of Mohammed Deif, head of Hamas's military wing, because they believe that Deif is the brainchild behind Hamas's war, along with Azizuddin al-Qassam, Brigade's commander Marwan Issa. And so now, while their forces are retreating in the Gaza Strip, Hamas diplomacy is winning strong points against Israel by attacking Ben-Gurion Airport in the environs and causing the American four horsewomen of the apocalypse, or the Muslim sisterhood, as I call it, under Valerie Jarrett, to suspend all flights into Israel in order to starve them financially. That's the news. I'm just giving you a little news. I have nothing to say. Now, the last hour we talked about meaninglessness of life, meaningful of blah, blah, blah. And I went into a long story about God and the Bible and the Jewish people. And I, you know, asked you what keeps you going and what, you know, what makes you work. How do you get up in the morning and do it? I told you how, why I get up in the morning, right? See, I got onto that toward the end of the last hour. I got into something I've never told you, a whole story about why, what motivates me. And it was about my family and all of that. How I was created, how I was formed, why I'm able to entertain, why I'm able to explain, why I'm able to communicate with audiences that I can't even see, invisible audiences, as it were. So remember, the Jewish people invented an invisible God that no one can see. In essence, this is a reversal of that. You're an invisible audience I can't see. I want you to think about that. Because I come from a long line of prophets, I can speak to an invisible audience. I don't know if you exist. It's not a fiction. I know you're out there. I mean, I see the numbers. I have 200 and some odd stations and several million people a week tune in and out of the show. So you're an invisible audience, yet I can communicate with you. How is that possible? It's actually a miracle when you think about it. But it's actually a continuation of the prophetic spark that I still have in my genes somewhere. And it also goes back to my family and my brother. That's what we were talking about, how the handicapped brother led me to understand the powers I had. So let me go to the callers now, and I have not yet taken, I think, a caller. I took one caller in 2 hours. I'm in one of these states of mind because the world is in such a state of shock from what Obama's done to the world. By the way, he's in my hometown tonight fundraising to a group of sycophants who all want favors from him. That's the leader. Hamas, nothing to him. Israel, nothing to him. Nothing, doesn't matter. Just keep on going and golf tomorrow. Well, it's almost the weekend. I mean, TGIF is coming up. Have a brewski, a couple of fries, and go out on the golf course. That's all. WBAP in Dallas. Ryan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks so much, Dr. Savage. I'd like to get two or three quick points out so you can continue. Number one, the integration of the discussion of Judeo-Christian history, the Bible, and the God we know into current affairs that you deal with, I think is absolutely critical. You're the only person I know who's doing it, and there's no other way to go, I believe. Second point, in as much as atheism is so destructive, as you've well pointed out, it might be nice to explore the roots of atheistic rites, which really don't exist because they derive every single one of their anticipated rites from Judeo-Christian law from the beginning of the Pentateuch. So we've got all of that the atheists have stolen in order to justify their behavior. And the third thing...
Well, I understand. They also, you know, the concept of an atheist can't exist anyway. Because if an atheist says he does not believe in anything, right, then he's believing in something. He's believing in nothingness. So by logic, she has proven she believes in something. She believes in nothingness.
Absolutely.
That proves my point. That everyone has to believe in something. It's impossible to exist without believing in something, even if it's a nothing.
A lot of truth to that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it really is a lot of truth to that. And I appreciate your understanding of my comment, combining news with the Bible, especially in this day and age. I'm trying to help you with that, you know. It's that simple. But it still comes back with what you believe in. How do you cope with all of this if you don't believe there's anything at the end of the road? I mean, do you believe that when you die and the chemicals in your body and the electrolytes in your body stop operating, you're just nothing? A sack of what? Of nothing? And you should be thrown in a garbage can? Yes, most of you believe that. That is why incineration has become very popular in America. See, with the increase in I can't even think of the word. It's so alien to my mind. I can't even think of it. What do they do when they burn bodies? I don't remember. Cremation. If I were to do an analysis, as cremation goes up in a society, the belief in God goes down, or vice versa. As faith in God goes down, cremation goes up. And that's true, of course, in a Judeo-Christian society. It's not true in a Hindu society where cremation is done as a matter of course. That's another story entirely, but we won't go there. We're not going to deal with Hinduism. We're going to deal with Judeo-Christian societies such as ours and in Western Europe. Cremation goes up as belief in God goes down. But that doesn't lead us anywhere. It just leads us to where we are. It explains where we are. It doesn't explain why we're here or how we got here. And I think it will take someone on the order of Constantine to save the West right now. Not Samson, but only Constantine can save the West, and we don't have a Constantine. You need a man as strong as the greatest general we've ever had, combined with one of the greatest religious teachers we've ever had in history, all in one man, to save the West. Nothing else will do. Do you know that? We need someone with the heart of a lion and the soul of an Abraham to save the West. Nothing else will do. It's as simple as that. And yet you wake up and you see low-life, fifth-rate minds on MSNBC like this guy Brzezinski, who I don't know about you, but every time I see Brzezinski, I think of an SS uniform. I don't know why. I'm not saying he's a Nazi. I didn't say that. But when I see Brzezinski, I think SS. Here is a guy who's always hated Jews in Israel, and the best I can figure out. So he goes on MSNBC this morning, and he says, Netanyahu, well, listen to yourself in clip number two. You won't believe this.
I think there are some politicians in Israel who are men enough and women enough to do that. I don't include Prime Minister Netanyahu in that category. I think Madeleine put it extremely well. The issue is larger than just Gaza. The issue is
There's the man who I despise possibly more than anyone on earth next to Madeleine. And Madeleine is referring to that monster, Albright. That monster sellout, Madeleine Albright, who bombed the Serbs into the Stone Age and laughed about it while she was destroying the nation and stealing a Kosovo from the Serbs. That's who this team is. These are the architects of evil on the planet. Madeleine Albright, Brzezinski, and that pack of Soroites are the evil, pure evil in my mind. So he goes on television, and in the comfort of his radio studio, the SS lookalike, Brzezinski, says that Netanyahu, who's a war hero, by the way, is not man enough to broker a peace deal. Well, I know that Netanyahu could wipe up the floor with Mr. Brzezinski. I'm sure of it. But I find it very interesting that a man like this sitting in the comfort of a studio on his fat behind will say that Netanyahu is not man enough. This is not the first time we've heard these words. This is increasingly coming out of the mouths of these Obamaites, these New World Orderites. No one's man enough for them. First, Putin wasn't man enough. That was Dianne Feinstein last week. Oh, he needs to man up, she said. You imagine this coming out of that old harridan? He needs to man up. You hear this? He needs to man up. That's a new word. Who writes this stuff for them? Man up. Now, Netanyahu's not a man. A real man wouldn't defend his people. A real man wouldn't order his military to say enough is enough, stop kicking the Jews around, because we'll finally show you what's going to happen. Same thing over and over again since 1948. The Jews are pushed around, kicked around, attacked, and the minute they fight back and get the upper hand, all of a sudden the Arabs scream for peace. There's nothing new under the sun. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
In Israel right now, there is a battle for peace in Israel. They are being embattled by a group who teach their children in the educational materials we help pay for to hate Jews, to hate Israelis. They teach the people to hate Israelis as well. They name streets and holidays after people who kill innocent people. It's time to cut off every dime of American money going to anyone who has any kind of relationship with Hamas, killing in the Middle East, and especially in Israel. It's time to bomb Iran's nuclear capabilities. It's time for the United States. If we're not going to stop Iran's nukes, then let Israel do it.
Well, that's a Republican named Louis Gohmert who says it's time to bomb Iran and cut off every dime to those who teach hatred like this. And so there are people out there, few and far between, who see what's going on and know that it's a war for survival for all of us at the end of the day. We understand that our borders are being overrun and that 90%, did you hear this? Didn't make it to your local San Francisco newspaper or New York? Pew Research report, nearly 90% of the illegal immigrant children are teenagers. That's right, teenagers. You didn't know that. And they got this through a Freedom of Information Act request. And 90% of the, quote, children that Nancy Pelosi likes to say are children are teenagers. 90% of them are teenagers. Teenagers. Now, what are they coming here for? Well, I suppose some of them are coming here to work. Gardeners, busboys, construction. I'm sure some of them are. But, you know, some of them will be recruited in the gangs they left behind. Some of them will come here to kill, to deal drugs. And the police are going to have to deal with it, not you. Yet Obama doesn't care. He's out there raising funds in San Francisco. And you don't care because the Republicans won't tell you this. Meanwhile, Representative Louis Gutierrez, Mr. Louis Gutierrez, keeps saying that they're all children. How come so many of these children have beards and gang tattoos? That's one thing if I could speak to Mr. Louis Gutierrez. I'd say, Mr. Gutierrez, you want amnesty for these children. How come so many of these children have beards and gang tattoos? Can anyone explain that to me? He wants them to receive amnesty. And he said primarily to punish white people. He said that. So this is a form of terrorism. Who is performing greater terrorism on America right now, Muslims or La Raza? It's La Raza. Who is actually impacting Americans more right now, Islamism or La Raza? It's La Raza. And yet the president, the Republicans won't say a word about it. This is not about immigration at all. This is about invasion. This is about invasion. It's that simple. You can't take pictures of them. The buses are covered with blackout screens. The buses and planes are filled with teenagers, many of them with beards and gang tattoos. And you don't see a picture of this. Diseases are coming in. You don't see a picture of this. Not one word. You don't see a word of it. We're being overrun, and the media won't let you see this. Now, this is the Pew Research that reported this. As liberal as it gets, nearly 90% of illegal immigrant children, the ones that Nancy Pelosi says are all sacred. I think she even washed one of their feet, a little girl. They're teenagers. Many with beards and gang tattoos. Can you believe this? God, what is it going to take for the people to wake up in this country? When are we going to see the equivalent of the Ukrainian parliament where they get into a fist fight? At least then we'd get something for our money. If the Democrats and Republicans could just fight in it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Staying out of San Francisco today, the commander-in-chief is here raising money. But don't worry about him not being in charge. I mean, he has all of the equipment he needs to launch missiles at anybody or blow up cities, put sanctions on Israel and Russia. Believe me, he's in charge even though he's raising money. He's a real commander-in-chief. He's the kind we need. He's the modern commander-in-chief. Simply with a pen, he can change the Constitution or override it. And with a BlackBerry, he can annihilate a nation. That's wonderful. There's no need for those old men in the Congress. In fact, we could save a lot of money if everyone in Congress just went home and took early retirement. I mean, Obama and the Muslim sisterhood that runs the country, they're the ones doing such a good job. And so between the Muslim sisterhood and the president, we don't really need a Congress anymore. And the Supreme Court, who needs them? They should just go home and take retirement. The Muslim sisterhood can make all these decisions. So that's why I say, you know, we have an atheistic president imposing his sense of meaninglessness on all of our institutions. And so atheism is now spreading like a cancer in the country. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Now, you know, you understand what I'm doing. I'm trying to weave the news into a philosophical topic. That's what I'm doing. No one's doing what I'm doing. It's easy for me because I think, and I think, therefore, I talk. So we're living in an age of atheism. We have a government that's clearly atheistic and respects nothing but themselves. This is what happens when you have an atheist in the White House. Why are there so many vampire movies? You know, when I'm scanning for movies and I see every, when I see vampire, I turn it off. And they're very clever. The media guys who write the stuff up, the girls, it's always like, a very clever plot about, and it starts, and then middle, and then they find it's a vampire, turn it right. I won't even go. Could it be that Obama's a vampire? Would that explain the problems we're having? Maybe someone should do a script about his life after he's out of office, if he ever leaves office, called Untrue Blood. Would that work? So Woody Allen believes that life is meaningless. Not that he's a great philosopher, but it's an interesting kickoff point for that topic, because the Malaysian plane disaster, the fraudster-in-chief is landing in the San Francisco area today, raising money while the world is burning. At the same time, we have a lawless government in California. Last night, Governor Jerry Brown signed a law that would reduce the number of legal immigrants eligible for deportation after being convicted of a misdemeanor, even for crimes such as child molestation and an identity theft. That's what Governor Brown did. So he goes against the will of the people. Obama goes against the will of the people, and they call themselves great liberals. But they're really great atheists. Atheists believe only in power and only in themselves. They don't believe there's any consequences to their actions. Do you understand why we are seeing lawlessness from the State House to the White House? Do you understand it's because they believe they are a law unto themselves, that there are no consequences to their actions? They realize there's no competition because there's no media. And the people have no power. We're nothing but serfs to them. And they figure since there's no God, they can do whatever they want. They'll get away with it now. What do they care about tomorrow? There is no tomorrow. They figure whenever they die, they'll die, and there's been no consequences. It's very interesting to me that it's all connected to a loss of faith in God. This godlessness in America has led to a meltdown of our republic itself. This godlessness has led to an indifferent, craven presidency, unlike any before ever seen in this nation. And whether it be the State House, as I say, Cuomo in New York, the State House in California, they act as though there are no consequences because they don't believe in anything except pure power. Yesterday, we are the only show in the world that asked the simple question, who actually shot down the Malaysian airliner? You'll notice the propaganda now is complete. It started with a few YouTube videos, very much like Benghazi, and the idiots in the media gobbled it hook, line, and sinker, taking Obama off the hook for the border crisis and covering this around the clock. And we did a story on the MH17 cover-up with Paul Joseph Watson, an interview that many people called me about. The few people I listened to said it was the best show you've ever done, or best in years. Every day I hear the best in years. Every day I hear people saying, I never heard shows like this. Where do you get them from? If you missed the interview, the sound is on michaelsavage.com. WorldNet Daily wrote a story saying Savage was ahead of the story. U.S. beginning banning flights to press Israel into ceasefire. Remember I said that yesterday? The cover story of Obama and his minions is that the reason they banned U.S. flights to Israel was to protect passengers. I've got to tell you something. I'm more impressed with Obama and his minions than I've ever been in my life. They are the smartest connivers I've ever seen in the world. They know just how to parse things where they can get away with crimes that no other president could ever get away with, whether it be excuses for why hard drives were trashed, excuses for this, excuses for that. So they say, I'll tell you what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get together. We're going to crush Israel financially. We're going to ban all flights into Israel. But we're not going to do it and say it's a punitive measure. No, we're liable to alienate the Jewish voter. And, of course, Democrats count on the Jewish voter. So what we're going to do is we're saying it to protect flyers into Israel. I saw right through it. And the Washington Examiner published a story soon thereafter saying U.S. flight ban could be Hamas's biggest success and latest clash with Israel. I wrote, U.S. isolating Jews closes all flights to Israel on pretext of safety. I know what they did. Now, there are many other stories on MichaelSavage.com. I won't bore you with them. I noticed that the news is showing with great solemnity the arrival of the corpses of the flight in the Netherlands. And I'm looking at this, and I'm starting to say, wait a minute, what is this all about? Why are soldiers marching with the caskets as though they're fallen soldiers? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to make light of this tragic situation for all the families that will be affected for eternity with this shootdown. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. But I'm asking myself, why is there such solemnity surrounding this with full military honors? After all, they were not military officers or soldiers coming back from a war zone. So I'm saying, wait a minute, you mean the worldwide liberal propaganda is so great that they can even turn a tragedy such as this into propaganda value? And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. The atheists who run the media, who don't believe in God, don't believe in a hereafter, are covering the arrival of the bodies in the Netherlands with the slow-stepping soldiers, around-the-clock coverage, again, to isolate, punish, and villainize Putin. Putin is the new devil. Putin is the new Hitler. Putin is the new enemy of everything that the liberal West hates. That's what's going on. And now we turn our attention to Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein, I'll never understand how a mayor of San Francisco could wind up not only a senator, that I could see, because that's not such a distinguished position, but how a woman with such a questionable resume could wind up as chairman of the committee that she has, which is the most powerful committee in the U.S. Senate. Listen to her in clip number 18, Dianne Feinstein. This is amazing.
Look, I'm not going to tell the president what to do, but I think the world would very much respect his increased attention on this matter. And I think there ought to be increased attention.
So the other day, Dianne Feinstein says that Vladimir Putin should man up and admit that his people shot down the plane. She attacks President Obama for being inattentive. I guess she's now become sort of the school mom with the ruler slapping the boys on the wrists. She's now speaking for the feminists. I guess she's taken on a new role. I thought that was someone else's role, but here she's now attacking Obama in a offhanded jape. Well, it's strange to me that we're hearing about sanctions on Russia. At the same time, we see that the Obama administration has imposed sanctions on Israel. Now, of course, they won't call it sanctions. They said they did it for the safety of those on American airplanes. But nevertheless, they imposed sanctions on Israel by saying U.S. flights are forbidden from landing in Tel Aviv. Immediately, the neo-Soviet empire in Europe, called the EU, did the same thing. So Israel's now isolated. No flights in, no flights out. So who won by that? The winner in that is Hamas. Why would they want Hamas to win? Because it's simple. The Muslim sisterhood in the White House wanted Hamas to win. They wanted to send a message to Hamas that they're the little David and Israel's the Goliath, and that the U.S., wink, wink, although it's inhibited from saying so because of the tremendous Zionist presence all over the media, we inside the White House and the Muslim sisterhood are on your side, brothers. And so we're going to do everything we can to send you those signals, and we're going to stop allowing flights to land in Israel. Israel will be starved. They'll have to stop their war against your poor innocent brethren in the Muslim Brotherhood, known as Hamas, in Gaza. It's astounding to me what's going on, that the border crisis has been completely obliterated by the shootdown of the Malaysian airliner. That was a day after. A day after immigration became the number one issue in the minds of the average Joe out there in America. A day after the golfer became had his lowest poll numbers ever. A day later, the jetliner gets shot down by somebody over Ukraine, and immediately all of the border people that are surging over are forgotten. And a report just came out that 96% of the illegal alien children have been released to sponsors, so-called, in the United States. In other words, they've been set free. Obama has passed amnesty without passing amnesty. He is the greatest fraudster in the history of the United States government. Never in history have we ever seen a fraudster like this operating outside the law. We have open borders. We have open borders and a closed society. We have open borders and a police state. We have open borders and a surveillance state. We have open borders and a warmongering state. It's amazing to me. Open borders. Did you want a massive influx of people into this country who did not know America's borders, language, and culture? Do you think that that's good for America? Can anyone listening to this show explain to me how bringing in people who are illiterate in Spanish, they may be able to speak it in a rudimentary fashion, they cannot write it, or they cannot read it. That's the largest percentage of them are illiterate in their own home language. Can anyone explain to me what this will do to our schools, to our hospitals, and to our society at large? Does anyone out there believe that this wave of immigrants is the same as the Eastern European immigrants who came here and basically built America? Because if you say that, then you're truly insane. Then you're so blinded by your liberal doxy that you can't even see straight. Not all immigrant groups are the same. They're not the same. Just as not all people are the same, not all immigrant groups are the same. And that's why you have immigration laws. A sane nation has immigration laws which define who you want in the country. And how do you determine who you want in the country? You determine whether you need them. What do you need? What skills do you need from them? Well, according to Obama, we certainly want people with no skills. We want illiteracy and no skills so you can increase the welfare state, so you can increase the number of those dependent upon Big Sister. Do you not see that for what it is? Okay, maybe you do. I realize that's a lot of information that I gave you, and I realize that it's as dense as a Persian miniature. Very unusual for current American media and current American radio. But I have to give you everything at once in order to give you anything at all. Write that one down. Sometimes I have to give you everything at once in order to give you anything at all. Do you understand what I just said to you? I cannot conduct the show on the most basic of levels. Good, bad. They're good, they're bad. We're good, everyone else is bad. Russia bad, Ukraine good. Can't do it. In other words, that's not the way the ball bounces. That's not the way I think. I analyze things. And what do you tune into the show for? My meatball recipes? The stories about Teddy? I don't know, maybe. I think the majority of people who have learned to love the Savage Nation over these last 20 years have come to appreciate my ability to think things through and analyze with them, not for them. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. Most conniving administration in American history. They're very smart. Never underestimate your enemy. Never underestimate the enemies of freedom. Never. They're so clever that they can put sanctions on Israel and still hold on to the Jewish vote. They're so smart that they could bankrupt Israel by banning flights into Israel under the guise of safety for passengers, that even the liberal reform rabbis will be mouthing Friday night how wonderful Obama is. And you should vote Democrat. They're wonderfully smart. They're so smart that they can take the worst poll numbers in history, which occurred last weekend, because the average Joe finally realized that the border is being overrun by gangbangers under the guise of bringing in children, that the next day a plane goes down. They're so smart that they can manage all of this. Never underestimate them. So they isolate Jews. They close off flights to Israel on the pretext of safety. And every Reform rabbi we'll be in the synagogue tomorrow night thanking Obama for protecting Jews. And then today we wake up and we have the atheist Woody Allen in a press conference saying that life is meaningless, it's all going to end, and all the great art means nothing, and he keeps making the movies. So I say, wait a minute, how do I connect that to the news? It's simple. I see solemnity attached to the arrival of the caskets in Holland with short-stepping military as though the poor passengers who died in that plane crash were all military heroes. And I say, wait a minute, what? Something's not right with this picture. I've never seen the remains of passengers being treated as though they're war heroes. I didn't understand that. So why was Holland affording these poor people the corpses of the poor people, really for the relatives, all the equivalent of a military funeral. Why? I asked the question, and I said, but the atheists who don't believe in God suddenly believe in the solemnity and the meaningfulness of their deaths. Why? Well, because it has a political purpose. They can turn it into political fodder. They can attack Putin, they can attack Russia, and they can support the European Union's desire to grab the shale in order to become energy independent. It's that simple. To me, I'm just putting the pieces together. But it raises a larger question, which is life meaningless? Because after all, Woody Allen, as you know, is the equivalent of the smartest man on earth to atheists. And therefore, he says, the sun will one day burn out, it will all end, we shouldn't care anymore. And we shouldn't even care, I guess, about torture. Because if we're torturing each other, what does that matter? We're just sacks of meat with electricity keeping us animated. What does it matter if you torture an animal, to Woody Allen? We're all going to die anyway, so eat the beef now. Right? I mean, isn't that what Woody Allen is saying? There's no meaning to life? This is what happens when you have no belief system. You come to the conclusion when your life is over that the world ends. And all you start thinking about is that, gee, everything I created will go up in dust. And so you become very depressed because he has nothing in his mind, or soul rather, to carry him over to the next to the transition to the next phase of existence.
Savage.